Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
You are very welcome to the Ireland's Birth Stories podcast. My name is Cora Gernon. I created this space for women to share all of the details surrounding their pregnancy, labour, birth and everything in between without feeling shy about the detail. Sit back and enjoy over 100 hours of birth stories told by you, the listeners. Hello there. How are you all doing? I hope you had a nice weekend. I didn't do a whole lot and I sometimes really enjoy those weekends when you feel you just need to chill. So we did nothing on Sunday. On Saturday and then Sunday we went to see family. So just a nice, wholesome, chilled out weekend. Anyway, to introduce you to today's episode, I share my chat with Aideen, who is a qualified nurse, midwife, and most recently a lactation consultant. And she mentions her Instagram page, which is milkmam.ie. So that's a website. Her Instagram page is milkmam, and she shares a lot of information and support. And she has a passion for that postpartum period. We didn't speak too much about it in this episode, but she really has a passion for women's mental health as well. So she talks. She provides support on her platform surrounding that as well. So Aideen talks us through her two pregnancies and birth stories. She gave birth to two little boys. She talks about conception first time round. She thought she would conceive really quickly and she was waiting 7 months. Although she mentions in the grand scheme of things, that is a really short space of time, but not doesn't feel that way when you're in it. She, as a midwife, it's really nice to hear her perspective as a midwife. She talks about her preferences, then goes straight into labour and the birth of her little boy. And it was quite quick. She was induced and it was quite quick. So it was about 5 hours all in, which she wasn't expecting. I think a lot of us expect a really long 12, 13 hour labour, which doesn't happen for all of us. She then goes on to talk about her second experience, which was at home with the support of her husband and her midwives. A really nice story. She did have to go to hospital. So an ambulance came to bring her to hospital because they thought that she had third degree tear. Thankfully, she didn't. And she also mentioned something which I know so many women have mentioned before. When they have a vaginal birth without any pain relief and then they end up having a tear or third degree tear and they need an epidural for that and it can feel really disappointing. So Aideen was just felt that to a certain extent, but she didn't need the epidural, so she was relieved to be able to go home an hour after she received the care that she needed in the hospital. So a nice story, two completely different experiences, hospital and home, but a really nice episode to hear the perspective of someone who has previously worked in the a maternity care setting. So thank you to Aideen for sharing her story. I really appreciate it. Enjoy. So Aideen, you are very welcome to the Ireland's Birth Stories podcast.
Thank you. How are you?
Good. Yeah, great. Delighted to sit down and have a chat with you. Do you want to just mention your Instagram page? Actually, I'd love if you could do that and I'll direct people your way as well, because I know you're putting time and effort into that. So it'd be nice to highlight that on the podcast.
Yeah, no problem. I set up an Instagram page just early into the COVID well, just a little bit before actually COVID, called milkmam.ie. So that's milkmam with an M at the end. And if you Google it, of course, it autocorrects all the time to milk my milkman.
But yeah, of course.
you'd find me eventually. Two very different suppliers of milk support.
Yeah.
So that's my Insta page. Yeah. And I started that just over 2 years ago.
And so you're a lactation consultant?
Lactation consultant. Yeah. Midwife, nurse, lactation consultant. Yeah. So I did my lactation training. Before I had children, it was kind of about 3 years into my working as a midwife. I went back from being a nurse for about 15 years, I decided I'd always wanted to be a midwife. So I went and did that training. And then about 3 years into that, I did separate specialist training to be an IBCLC, which is an international board certified lactation consultant. And it was mainly just for my own stuff. Yeah, it was mainly just for myself. I'm kind of like, I'm an eternal student. To help women, just to be able to give them the answers that they were looking for. And I just felt that the basic midwife training didn't really give us enough, just kind of scratched the surface. Yeah. So I did that. And then little did I know that when I had my own first baby at home and COVID kicked off, I was really conscious that women just didn't have enough support. So I just started this page to put out a bit of information. Then all of a sudden it kind of snowballed from there. And I do private work now as a lactation consultant part-time. Yeah, I have a few jobs.
Okay, let's get stuck in. If you want to tell us a little bit about you and your family, and then we'll chat about your birth stories.
Perfect, I will. So my name is Aideen. I am 41 and a half years old, and I'm married to Deck for 4.5 years now. We met a little late in life. Well, I know mid-30s isn't that late these days, but it was late enough for us. We loved each other from the get-go, really, and we knew it was it. So we actually got married about a year and a half after we first met, and thankfully soon enough after that we were very lucky to have two little boys, 18 months apart. Miles is 3 and Vinny at the moment is 18 months. And I work as a nurse midwife in a general practice at the moment, and I also work, I do a little bit of side work as a lactation consultant.
So do you want to talk us through conceiving your first little boy?
Sure. So I was, I think I was 38. Yes, I was 38 when we got married. And I thought about coming off the pill that you're on for so many years, just before we were getting married, so that I'd be off it from the get-go. And I thought, oh no, I can't do that, you know, I have to go on honeymoon and enjoy myself. And then of course it took a number of months after that of trying to conceive, and you certainly run out of steam after about 6 months. But long story short, we did conceive our first, thankfully, straight away, really at 7 months. And we were really lucky that my first pregnancy went ahead and all went really well. I was working as a midwife in a hospital at the time, we were just about to go off to on holidays actually to a friend's wedding in Italy. And I would always tell women, never do a pregnancy test before your period is due, or even on the day it's due. Just don't do it to yourself. Wait a few days until you know it's really late. But I was kind of conscious that we were flying to Italy the day after this last shift in work, and we have a HCG machine right there to use, and you can pop your little urine sample into it and you get your answer straight away. And I thought, oh, I'll just stick a urine sample into it just before I head home on my rower home. I put it in, said goodbye to all my friends, got changed, and I got on my bike and I was halfway home and I went, oh God, I left that in the machine.
Oh.
And knowing that the night staff that had come on would go in and see either a positive or a negative and wonder whose was that.
Who's that? Oh my God, that would have been great on the ward.
So I turned back around and I went back to the hospital fully convinced it would be negative anyway, and it was a waste of time doubling back. But ran into the side room beside the office where the machine was, and here was this sample sticking out saying positive.
Positive, wow.
And then I was like cycling home with it going, was that my sample? Or was my sample already out, and another woman sample had been put in, because at the time we wouldn't have put IDs on it. We're doing so many urine samples over the course of a day. So anyway, I got home and I just handed it to my husband and I said, I think this is mine. And he was like, okay. So anyway, it was mine. Was able to confirm a few days later when I did a second test that it was mine and I was pregnant. That shone a different light on our fun romantic holiday away initially.
Yeah, of course.
With my early pregnancy, but no, all was well.
And how did you feel then throughout your first trimester?
I was really, really lucky, actually. The first trimester, I don't even think I was particularly tired. I remember I would feel nauseous in the morning if I didn't eat almost as soon as I got up. But luckily, once I had food in my tummy, I settled and I was absolutely fine. I breezed through it. I used to run about three times a week. I'd always do the park run. I loved the park run on a Saturday, the 5K. It had actually gotten me through quite a difficult stage in my life a couple of years before meeting my husband. That was when I started running, and just for my mental health, to just have something routine and regular to do on a Saturday morning. So I loved that. And I decided as long as I felt okay in the pregnancy, I would keep doing it. And that went okay, actually, for the early first trimester. But when I got to about 12 weeks, I had to put the running aside because I started getting PGP, which is the pelvic girdle pain, or some people know it as SPD, symphysis pubis dysfunction, or something like that. I got this niggling right in my symphysis pubis in at the top of my legs, and that just persisted for the rest of the pregnancy.
Okay.
But looking back, for that pregnancy, that was quite manageable. I worked through it. I could walk slowly, but I could walk. I didn't need any supports with it. I had to turn really gingerly in bed, and as the pregnancy advanced, that did get harder and harder. But looking back, it was manageable. So I do feel I was lucky in that sense. For that pregnancy, I pretty much breezed through that pregnancy, really. I worked up to 36 weeks. And yeah, that was.
So what was your birth plan, your preferences?
So I didn't really have preferences per se, but I did know that I wanted to go with the Domino team within the hospital that I worked in. So the midwives that follow you throughout. And when I booked in with them at 12 weeks, they give you a form that you fill out. And I had never actually seen this before because I'd never worked with them per se. And I filled it out, and towards the end of it, it said, what were your plans for pain relief in labor? And obviously the Domino are really advocates of, in as much as possible, a physiological birth without medication or intervention or analgesia. Other than gas and air. And I wrote on it, you know, that I would aim to do all the usual things of labor at home for as long as I could, and use water and walking and lunges and squats and rest and music and hypnobirthing and all of these things that you hear about in terms of low or minimal intervention. And then at the end of it, I wrote, and epidural if I feel necessary. And I remember when I did the booking appointment, it was one of the more advanced midwives who took me into the room and said, I see you wrote epidural on this. What do you mean? And my response was just, look, I don't know what my pain threshold is going to be like. I was really doubtful of myself. I suppose in some way for good reason. I'd never even been a patient in hospital. I'd never had a cannula even put into my hand. I'd never had more than bloods taken on myself. I was really lucky. I suppose I had broken fingers and things like that playing tag when I was younger, but I'd never had to be in hospital or be operated on or anything like that. So I didn't know what my pain threshold was going to be like. And I also was wise enough as a midwife to know that first labors on first babies can be extraordinarily long. And even the most wonderfully tolerant and high pain thresholded woman reaches their limit, and everyone's limit is different. So I suppose I just wanted to be open with myself and with them about where I thought I was going. And she understood that. But she worked hard on me for the rest of the pregnancy to, you know, believe in yourself, do your reading, do your practicing, keep yourself fit, you know, all those kind of things. But as well as my PGP became more of a problem as the pregnancy advanced, I really wondered, you know, how am I going to do, try all these different positions to assist my labor? All those kind of things were floating around in my head. But I suppose I just imagined being able to, at the very least, spend time with my husband at home in this early pre-labor kind of a phase, at least to be able to do that and go to hospital when I really felt I needed to, and then just take it from there. My main hope was not to have an emergency cesarean at the end of a long labor. And very particularly, I really didn't want to have an instrumental delivery. I've seen those many, many times, and I've more crucially, I suppose, seen the aftermath for women. And not to scare anybody who might be listening, but I suppose who wants an intervention such as any kind of an instrument put into your very precious and delicate bits if you can avoid it? So yeah. I obviously really, really, really wanted to avoid that. But yeah, that those were my kind of thoughts around how I hoped labor would go. To be honest, actually, the thing I most feared was stitches. And that was because my mother had put the fear of God in me. She had four children, and she birthed the first three vaginally without, I don't think there was any instruments involved. And the fourth, she had a cesarean because the it was an unstable lie. So my sister was lying sideways. But I was her third child, and I was a very quick delivery for her. But she would always tell us the story of her first baby, which was your very typical, very long pre-labor phase. And then I don't know how long, maybe 8 to 12 hours of her actual active labor, which I know now is actually quite an average active labor phase for a first mum. But this was in the 70s, and she felt really unsupported and really unlistened to. And I think, you know, at the time my dad was banished outside of the room, and she was, I think, most distressed by being sutured after the event without sufficient local anaesthetic, I know would at all costs try to be avoided now. But I know sometimes that's possible, sometimes that's not. But I know I just always remember that kind of story from her. And I think that's what actually worried me the most, not the labor, not the delivery, but the stitches afterwards. And of course, now when I look back, that was like so manageable to me in comparison to all of everything else that went on. You almost, I know not everybody would agree with this, but you almost don't care what's going on down at your vagina after your baby's been born and you've experienced what you've experienced up to that point.
And you also don't realize how common getting stitches is. I remember after I had Oliver, I rang my mum and I was like, "Mom, I have stitches." And she's like, "Yeah, and so does every other second person. Yeah. Don't worry."
It's so true. Yeah. Especially first time mums, probably.
Yeah.
Well, maybe I'm picking this out of the sky, but probably 90% of vaginally born first time mums would have a stitch. People also think that it's a lot of different stitches, and it tends to be just one stitch in a loop that dissolves. But I suppose, yeah, none of that is particularly pleasant, but it's a small little issue in a big pond.
So do you want to talk us through your first signs of labor?
So I woke up early on a Sunday morning. I was 37 and 6, and I just felt a bit wet between my legs. And I suppose, not to be too descriptive, but anyway, here I am. I'm a midwife.
As descriptive as you want.
Vaginal discharge would have increased towards the end of the pregnancy anyway, which is all very normal. So I didn't really overthink it. I went out to the loo and I passed urine. And when I wiped, I just immediately knew. I'm so used to looking at scrutinizing toilet paper from women to go, is that urine or is that Waters? And I knew with the pink kind of tinge to it, it was Waters. And I got really excited. I was like, oh my God, this is brilliant. I'm well, I haven't finished work for very long, and I thought I would have had more Netflix time. But yeah. I was delighted, though, that I wasn't going to be, I already knew, I was like, I'm not going to be one of those people creeping up to 42 weeks pregnant. So I went into my husband, and I just got back into bed and cuddled up with him, and he just opened his eyes and goes, good morning. And I said, so my waters have just gone. And he absolutely exploded out of the bed. He didn't know what to do or say. And I was happy at that point that the baby was moving. So I knew there wasn't a mad rush into the hospital, but I know that that the team in the hospital would always want to check over the baby and yourself once the waters go, and just to make sure that everything was okay. So we had our breakfast, and we went in after about an hour or so and had the routine CTG to check the baby's heart rate and make sure everything was okay. And also just to confirm that it was, that the waters had gone. And they did, I think they did a swab to check for group B strep, which would be routine, I suppose, after your waters go. During none of this time did I have any cramps or pains at all. And I was, you know, just waiting for it to start. I knew that it's unusual for, it's less likely for waters to go before pains. Normally it's the other way around. The woman gets contractions first and then the waters go at some point during the labor, sometimes not even until the very end. So went in, got the check, had the swab done. They confirmed that, yes, my waters had gone, and that they were clear, which was obviously crucial because I would only be allowed to go home if they were clear, as opposed to meconium or blood in the waters. And baby was happy. So they said, right, you go off home and we'll ring you and just make sure that swab was negative for GBS. If it was positive, they would have called me back in and induced me straight away and put me on antibiotics. But thankfully it was negative. So I was given the all clear to have nearly 24 hours at home and be booked in for induction the next day. And I went home and I don't know, my gut just told me that because pains hadn't even started yet, and by this stage we were probably 4 or 5 hours into it, I thought, oh no, I really want these pains to come, because I really, really, really did not want to get induced. I just did not see that happening. And I have a lot of strong feelings about inductions. I know they have their place in certain circumstances for women for a whole array of reasons, and they're very reasonable reasons, and obviously for the right reasons, for mother's protection and for the baby's health. But I also know for a fact that inductions are overdone and they result in too many instrumental deliveries and too many failed inductions, which end up with really quick cesarean sections at the end of a really long induction, which is a really, really traumatic thing for a woman and her partner to go through, and for a baby to go through in a lot of circumstances. And I've seen and dealt with a lot of the aftermath. So I did not want an induction. So anyway, back to our Sunday at home, not a pain in the world. We went for a walk. We watched a film. We both tried to race through the hypnobirthing book that was sitting on the kitchen table for about the previous 2 months. And I felt I would get to read that once I was on maternity leave, and hadn't gotten around to it yet, other than, I think, reading the introduction at the very beginning. And we went for another walk then later in the evening, and family called over, and it was all really weird because they were like, oh, your waters have gone. Wonder when this baby's going to show. And still no pains. We had our dinner and we went to bed, and I didn't sleep well that night. I think I was obviously anxious about the fact that I wasn't going into labor of my own accord. And also the fact that I was leaking very little water. So I knew as well that that most likely meant it was a hind water leak, which I don't know if you know, it just means that the waters are, it's rather than being a rupture at the bottom of the bag of membranes, that's right at the neck of the womb. It's up higher somewhere. So I don't know how it happens. It could be a baby's fingernail or something like that. It's more unusual for that to happen, I suppose. But the problem with a hind water leak is it doesn't always stimulate labor to start as much as the big burst at the bottom of the bag where the baby's head would be. So that was a bit disconcerting. So I didn't sleep great. I actually got up, came down to the kitchen, and I remember just being really upset, my husband coming down, and I was like, oh, this just isn't happening. I just know the writing's on the wall, and I'm going to go into hospital now, and all my friends are going to be around me and colleagues, and I just can almost see how this is going to pan out. So I wasn't terribly happy about that, but I didn't have any doubt about my health, though, or that I wasn't worried about the health of my baby either. I had positive feelings about that. I felt like we were going to be okay. I hate the not knowing. I just didn't know how things were going to go. So
it's really hard to surrender to that, especially first
time
around.
It is hard.
Because
it's hard.
I think it's the only thing, I suppose, that you have to be like, I have no control over this, and you have no insight into what it's going to look like either.
That morning we got up and had a bit of breakfast, and I just cried into my cornflakes because I turned to Dec and I just said, I just know I'm going to go in. I'm going to be induced. It's going to take 12 hours and I'm going to end up having a cesarean at the end of it anyway. I wish I could nearly just go in and just have the cesarean straight away, even though I didn't really mean that either. But I just hated that not knowing and being out of control. Mm-hmm. But anyway, it was a really stormy morning. It was Storm Brendan, as far as I remember. And we didn't know the sex of the baby. And Dec said, Brendan, if it's a boy? And I said, no way. I had a big dark cloud over my head going in. But to be fair to the hospital and my colleagues, when I went in and I was brought up to the antenatal ward, I was looked after like any other woman. Obviously, some of them knew me, some of them didn't, because it's a big enough hospital and we don't all work together. But I was treated with utmost respect and just really exceptional professionalism, I found. And I didn't feel like that was because I was a member of staff. Now, maybe it was, but I didn't feel like it was. I felt like I was being told the same and treated the same as any other woman in the room. And that was nice, actually. It was a way of me being able, given the green light, to just park my midwife and my nursing hat and just be a pregnant woman for that time being. So long story short, I suppose I should move on. When they came around on the round, obviously examined me and confirmed that the waters had gone again. And I was praying that my cervix had in some way changed enough that they'd be able to get in and break the waters in the hope that pains would start then. So a really amazing registrar did the examination, and it was uncomfortable, but I should go back to the hypnobirthing book. We both managed to read one chapter each, and I just read a really short synopsis of how to do the breathing during an examination, and my husband read the part about partner support, and actually both little bits that we read were absolutely invaluable for what was to come next. So I did my breathing through that examination, and I got through it, and I heard a big pop and loads of waters and loads of clear waters, and I was delighted. I thought, this is great. Pains are going to start now. This is wonderful. And while my husband was like, Jesus Christ, where is all the water coming from? And we were allowed to sit back in the bed. My lunch came, and I'm one of those sick people who absolutely loves hospital food. I think it comes from doing night shifts as a nurse, where you just like eat any scraps that are left over in the kitchen and make toast after toast after toast. I loved my lunch, and I knew I wanted to get as many calories into me as possible, because I just felt like it was going to be a really long day. And the midwife manager said to me at the end of that procedure, so we're just waiting on a room over in the delivery ward, and we'll send you over in about an hour. And I said, will you stretch it out to two, please? Because I just really wanted the pains to start. But of course, anyway, no pains. I was marched over to the delivery ward. Not a pain in the world. Leaking Niagara Falls, and set up in the room that is set up for the Domino team, which is it was a room I really hoped that I would be able to have, that it might be free, but it isn't always free, but I got lucky on the day anyway. It's just, you know, the bed is made kind of minimal importance, and it can be put to the side of the room, and you've got your ensuite and a birthing ball and a stool and just nice lighting and aromatherapy and things like that. It's just a nice room to be in, and I'd assist in delivering many, many babies in that room, and it was always my favorite. So I was glad to be going in there, and I think that's what relaxed me actually straight off. And I met my midwife, who I actually didn't know at all. She was one of the team that I'd never met before.
And that was actually,
I know when I first saw her, I was like, oh no, I don't know you. I thought that in my head, but as soon as she introduced herself, we just struck it off straight away, and the three of us just nattered for the first kind of hour when she was getting my drip in and getting things started and doing my obs and checking, having a feel of the bump and doing a CTG. Obviously, I was strapped up with the baby monitoring because it was an induction, which again was something I didn't really anticipate that I would be having that early in my labor, but such is life. But she knew my wishes, and she was like, look, doesn't matter. You've got a drip stand and you've got the monitoring. We'll use the wireless monitoring as much as we can. And you can, I can't remember whether she was letting me into the shower or not. I don't think I was pushed to go into the shower at that point anyway, so I didn't. But she would remind me throughout the following few hours to, you know, why don't you try the birthing stool, or why don't you sit on a ball for a while or go down onto all fours or do a few lunges. And I found that really helpful, because even though I knew to practice all of those things and to change my position every so often, I didn't think of it actually, because as the oxytocin was going into me early on, it didn't faze me too much. But oxytocin, synthetic oxytocin, does seem to have a different effect on women in terms of the strength of the contractions. And I was breathing quite well through them, come about 3 hours in, but I think I was probably so focused on them that I wouldn't have thought to change my position. So she was amazing in just really subtly going, why don't you get down onto your hands and knees there, Aideen, or why don't you lean back into deck, when I was sitting on a little stool, a little low stool. And I think that was just fantastic for getting my labor to progress. And usually you'd have 5 hours of oxytocin before you would be examined again, because there's no.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Great reason to examine anybody prior to that, because you obviously want the cervix to do its job and start opening up. So I was 4.5 hours into oxytocin when I felt the urge to go out to the toilet to do a poo. Sorry about that. I think it was about my third time going out. And on this occasion, I was just sitting on the loo and I had absolutely nothing to do, but I just started bearing down. And I had seen this so many times with women where you get that, like, it's almost like you're going to be sick, a kind of a bearing down. There's no control over it. It's like a wretch, but it's a downward wretch. And I was holding the drip stand and I had the door kind of half closed for a bit of privacy. And I just let out I don't know what kind of a monster sound. And my husband and the midwife ran into the room and went, okay, we'll get you onto the bed. And they walked me out and put me on the bed. And I think in my head, I thought, oh, brilliant. This means I'm ready to push. This is it. And she said, normally I wouldn't examine now until 5 hours, but we might do a little examination. I was like, yes, 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 please do that. And she examined and my heart fell when she said, I'd call you a good 4 centimeters. And I was like, oh, Jesus, we've got a long way to go. And she said, will I give you a little sweep while we're at it? And I said, yeah, you do whatever you want. And she, I don't know, swept, I don't know, like what, around the top of the baby's head. And the next contraction I felt was again expulsive, that again, like bearing down. And I knew instantly, once my body was doing that, I was like, okay, this is it. This is pushing time. Because literally seconds before that, just while she was doing the examination, or shortly after, I thought, I can't do this anymore. I'm going to have to ask for an epidural because this is really unbearable now. And if she's calling me 4 centimeters, then this is going to take 6+ more hours. This is what I was thinking in my head, you know, an hour per centimeter, as we were all kind of told in school. No, my body was ready to remove this baby, and the pushing just started straight away. And I ended up actually giving birth supine on my back. And I remember her saying, do you want to go onto your side or onto your all fours? Because she was kind of conscious that I didn't have an epidural in and I could position in whatever way I wanted. But for whatever reason, my body just wanted to stay where it was. I think it was probably partly to do with the PGP. I just couldn't imagine moving again. It was just so uncomfortable to turn. I just lay back and pushed. And I remember just trying to catch my breath between contractions because they were absolutely on top of each other. And I wished she would have turned off the oxytocin, but I knew she wasn't going to do that until at least the head was out. And we weren't at that point yet. But push. And the immense pressure of a head coming through your pelvis is just unbelievable. It's like nothing you'd have ever experienced before. But it was how I had been told before about once you're in that pushing phase, if you don't have an epidural on board, or even if you do, it's a pressure that you feel more than a kind of, it's a searing pain at times, contractions, but that goes to the wayside. In my experience anyway, it goes to the wayside during pushing because it's pressure. It's this solid thing coming down through your pelvis. It's like no poo you've ever passed. I could feel the relief in it. Like I could feel him moving down. I think I was lucky as well. I gave birth to a small little baby. He was only 3 kilos and I was 38 weeks on that day. And I think having seen him and how quick he actually came in such a fast labor, especially an induced labor on a first baby, I never expected him to be born within 5 hours of that. But looking back, I think he was just in a rush to see the world. He just needed a little helping hand, and he was born right there and then. And they lifted him up, and I can't remember whether myself or my husband said he was a boy, and he went straight up onto my chest, and it was just, oh my God, the most amazing relief in the whole world. I was so proud of myself. I was also so shocked that how fast it had been and how I'd coped with it. But like, I couldn't have done it without the midwife and my husband right there supporting me right the way through. And the chapter that he had read in that hypnobirthing book, he said one of the lines said, if you don't know what to say, say nothing at all. And so he said he did a lot of that and it was perfect. It was perfect. So that was Miles.
And did you choose to bottle feed or breastfeed?
I breastfed both boys. I, being a lactation consultant, I kind of knew those early days of how to troubleshoot those really common early problems like shallow latch, a difficult latch on the baby, and getting positions right. I knew the theory behind all of those things. Obviously, I'd never put a baby to my own breast before, so I didn't know what it was going to feel like. And I didn't know what form of anatomy my baby would have. I had enough professional confidence behind it to just take a calm approach to it, maybe. I was lucky. I had a baby who latched on quite well, really. If anything, both of my boys were loose. They didn't have the strongest of latch, which can be a problem in its own self, but I was able to manage that. And my milk came in a little bit kind of slow, kind of day four, day five. When we're taught in the books, it's like day two, day three. And I suppose now, being a mum of two, having fed two babies, I know that really there's a lot of grey areas in feeding and also just raising newborns. And there's no rule book. So there's a lot of winging it. And there's a lot of just trusting your own mother and father's instinct, I think. I fed, and the postpartum period was a blur. It was, looking back, it was really lovely and peaceful with the one baby at home in our quiet little house, and we'd cozy up in bed together, the three of us, and it was the middle of winter, and it was really dry. Kind of, I remember a lot of the days were really sunny, and I was starting to get my walking back, so my progress was going from being able to walk to the end of the driveway with the buggy, and then walking halfway down the road, and then walking a little bit further, and then probably 3 or 4 weeks in, I was able to do a full walk around the block. So the pelvis kind of started to improve, thankfully, pretty quickly for me. So that was all great until COVID hit when he was 7 weeks old. That, as we all know, that was a pretty stark new reality of being reclusive, which in a lot of ways, as a new mum, you're not going to be going out partying. I certainly didn't mind about not being able to go out for meals or to cinema or any of those things, because even without COVID, I wouldn't have been doing those with a newborn, really, I don't think. But I remember, though, mentally, I found a really unusual time of the year the most difficult. And I now know that it coincides with that month four, month five sleep progression that's bandied around. And it's a developmental phase in babies that I think is like the most difficult to deal with in my experience. In the first year of life, it's kind of that month four to month five when they're awake a lot during the night and they're just teething and there's loads of issues and it's really hard to fix any of them. And that happened in the May of 2020. So we were coming to realize that COVID was really not going away. And I remember just walking over to my local shops with Miles in the buggy, and it was a beautiful sunny day. And I'm a May baby, so I've always loved May, and in my memory, it's always been a sunny month. Maybe I've rose-tinted glasses, but I'm always a happy person in May. And I remember just the tears streaming down my face, walking to the shops, and I just couldn't stop crying. And I just was, it was obviously a good bit of sleep deprivation and just sadness about what was going on in the world. And just feeling a bit alone, because my husband is a healthcare worker himself. So he was not one of these people who was working from home and being able to, you know, drop down to the kitchen or something to see if I was getting okay. He was gone from 8:30 to 6:00 from Monday to Friday. So that was a long spell of time to not see anybody else. I just didn't really feel like reaching out to online things. I had a baby who fed, like he did the usual, he did the normal breastfeeding thing of feeding, you know, 12 times a day, maybe in those early months. And even though they'd be short little feeds, it still meant I had to sit down and do the feed like every 1.5 hours or so. And it might take 50 minutes, it might take a half an hour. And that's perfect because that's what I was there to do. And I couldn't do anything else really, but I wasn't able to be working on the laptop. I didn't have the concentration anyway to be doing any kind of Zoom things. So it was a lonely time. That's for sure. But yeah, it was for everybody, I suppose. But that was it. That was my postpartum time really with Miles.
So when you decided to conceive again, or did you feel in a good place then?
Yeah, I did. I did. I said to Deck at about 10, Miles was 10 months old, and he was feeding maybe once or twice a night. And my period came back actually after about 9 months. During that window of time, he was feeding much more during the day than during the night. So I was only up to him about maybe once or twice during the night at about when he was 9 to 10 months. So I wasn't too surprised that my period had come back. And I said, right, Deck, maybe we should kind of get onto this, because I knew I was approaching 40 and I'd really hoped to have more than one. And ideally, I'd love to have them before I was 40, or at least in my 40s. And knowing that Miles had taken about 7 months or so to conceive, I kind of envisaged the same or possibly longer. Well, I was very wrong, because Miles was 10 months old when we conceived Vinny. And I went, right, okay, so we're going to have an 18-month gap. That's great. Might as well, when we're in, when you're in to win. We were delighted. Again, it was thankfully a pregnancy that progressed, and I was pretty well, other than, you know, the usual being very tired in the first trimester. I was still feeding Miles. I was about 12 or 13 weeks. I was about 12 or 13 weeks pregnant when Miles started to sleep through the night. And because I was pregnant and I was going back to work as well and I was doing night shifts, I wouldn't be able to feed him during the night. And my supply just disappeared. And he had also started creche at that time. So we were separated. So that was the end of our feeding journey. And I was okay with that, actually, because I kind of was happy to get my body back to in somewhat myself before baby number two arrived. I went back into work and straight onto night shifts. And then COVID got worse. I can't really remember exactly what stage of lockdowns we were at that point. But because I was technically advanced maternal age, and that was a risk factor for my pregnancy. And I was working obviously in a high risk area, and at this point wasn't vaccinated yet, or was I? I can't remember. I might've had one vaccination. I had to work from home, and I thought, how is a midwife supposed to work from home? But anyway, it worked out for the rest of the pregnancy. It actually really worked in my favor and in the hospital's favor, really, because my PGP was 100 times worse the second time around. And if it wasn't for working from home, I wouldn't have been working at all. And I would have actually hated that, because I couldn't have done a 13-hour shift and been on my feet. I was entirely worse way the second time around. So I was doing booking visits and things like that over the phone from home, and that worked really well. yeah, the PGP was very hard. I remember towards the end of the pregnancy, we only have a bathroom upstairs, and thankfully it was summertime because Vinny was born in June. So I remember I had to pee out in the garden throughout the day in work from working, because I just couldn't go up and down the stairs any more times during the day. So I would come down after my shower and whatever in the morning, and that was it until I went up to bed.
So tell me why you decided to opt for a home birth.
I decided to opt. So after I had Miles, the midwife jokingly said to me the next day, oh, you'll have to have a home birth next time. Sure, you did that, no bother. And I thought, Jibris, you know what, I would consider it. I wouldn't have considered it on my first because I just didn't have any belief in myself that I would in any way be able to do it. And then I bloody well did it. To the surprise of myself and I think everybody else. I didn't even have to think about it. I just knew I'd be able to cope with labor at home. I just hoped that the pregnancy would progress in a way that would allow me to have a home birth. Yeah. So it was booked in and planned, and it was only towards the end of the pregnancy. I think I was probably about 36 weeks pregnant when one of my visits with the midwives was where they would come to the house and just see what the lay of the land was and also go through the technical information that is essentially a contract, which also myself and my husband were not really aware of, but they went through all of the reasons why I would have to be transferred to hospital or all of the reasons why the home birth would have to be abandoned even before labor. And some of them I would have known about before, say if I got any complications like diabetes or high blood pressure, any of those things, the home birth would be off the cards. So I knew those kind of bits. And then in labor, they went through really minute details of reasons why we would be transporting in either before the birth or immediately after if needs be. So, you know, we had our eyes open. I know my husband was happier after hearing all that because he thought, right, I think these women are on their game. They know what they're talking about and you're in good hands. And also we don't live that far from the hospital. So we were happy to go ahead. I certainly was happy to go ahead, but it wasn't until then my husband said, okay, now I'm happy to let's see how this goes. I didn't bother with a pool. I just had a funny feeling that Miles came quite quickly as an induced birth, that if I have a spontaneous labor at home, I knew it could be quite quick. So I didn't bother with that. I slightly regretted it. It would have been lovely to have a bit of water pain relief for my pelvis, but anyway, such is life. What happened was I thought my waters had gone again. I was standing in the kitchen and I got this little kind of a gush. It was more gush than a trickle. And I thought, oh no, that's the waters. And I looked down into my underwear and it looked a little bit kind of greeny. And I thought, oh no, that's meconium. That's the home birth. Off the plate straight away. And I rang Deck and he came home from work. He picked up Miles from creche, came home from work, and we dropped Miles over to my sister's to do a little kind of a test run sleepover. Because we knew we might get him to sleep over my sister's at the birth time if it happened to be during the day or early in the night or something. So we dropped him over and we headed in only to have confirmed that my waters had not gone. And that was actually show, basically. And I felt really embarrassed as a midwife to think that my waters had gone and it wasn't at all. And I also have told so many women that the show can display itself in lots of different ways, small amounts, big amounts. So thankfully it wasn't the waters. As the doctor was examining me, she said, will I do a sweep? And I kind of wasn't really prepared for that question. And I just said, oh, whatever. And so she went ahead and did a sweep. And we packed up, went home. This was just the late kind of evening. Went home. I had no pains. My waters hadn't gone. So I thought, okay, grand. So we get another night. I was 39 weeks pregnant. And at this point, because with the PGP and also being a week past where I'd had Miles, I felt like I was 43 weeks pregnant at this point. Okay. I could not wait to have the baby. I have massive empathy for anybody who goes any further, because I'd had Miles at 38 weeks, I kind of had that time in my head of thinking, right, any time after that is late. Like, so I thought, okay, look, let's just enjoy the evening. Our other baby is off being minded. We watched a film. I actually had, I shouldn't be saying this, but I had a single measure of Bailey's because it's my absolute favorite drink. And I hadn't had any. And I thought, well, we're nearly at the end of the road now. I'm going to have my one Bailey's. And I think he had a whiskey and we watched a film, went to bed later than I'd gone in the whole pregnancy. And I was reading in bed and I just didn't really feel like going to sleep. What's the next thing that happens? I got a period cramp and I thought, oh God, I wish I had gone to bed earlier now and had a few hours kip, because I just knew straight away, this is it. I had one cramp and then about 20 minutes later, I had another one. And then 20 minutes later, I had another. And I woke Deck that point and said, Deck, this is it.
Did you feel excited?
Yeah, I felt excited, yeah. And the fact that I couldn't even go to sleep was just really unlike me. So I went out to the bathroom, I did a wee, and then he came out onto the landing and he was like, are you sure? Like, you seem grand. And he said, do you want to go downstairs? And it's funny the way I just was like, no, I don't want to go downstairs. Even though all the while that we were thinking about having the home birth, I always imagined that I would maybe birth downstairs because we've a reasonable sized kitchen that has a nice big rug on it and we put a mattress down on it for me to, you know, lie down on or do all fours or lunges or whatever, and just have a bit of space to walk around. But I instantly was like, nope. And we had recently got a new bed and I also was adamant I would not be giving birth in the bed. Yeah, all the way through the pregnancy. Yeah. I was like, I can't imagine how giving birth in that bed. I haven't got the proper sheeting on it or anything. No way. So we had a little single mattress that I put beside our bed for me to kneel on so that I could just be up on my elbows on our bed and then have my knees supported under a mattress on the floor. And the contractions just were very prompt at coming closer and closer together. So really that happened at 12:30. That first cramp was at 12:30. And an hour later, we were both sure that this was labor beginning. So we rang the Domino team and said, look, I talked to them myself and I said, look, I know it's starting, but it's very early on. They're still at least 10 minutes apart and they're still very manageable. And they said, okay. Okay, well, why don't you ring us back in an hour and tell us how you're going? And 40 minutes later, Deck had to ring them and said, I think maybe you should actually pack up your gear and come here. And they said they were already in the car because they thought better of it. When they were talking to me on the phone, they thought, Aideen was actually kind of quick the first time around. And we have a funny feeling she will be this time too. And it's just as well they did, because they got to the house. Well, they had a bit of time, but it was quick. They got to the house in time to come up to me. I was sitting on the bed at this point. And they did one examination. And I can't even remember what they said I was. I don't know, 3 or 4 centimeters or something. And I was like huffing and puffing through the pains, but then I was chatting to them in between that. But I just remember a bit of an out-of-body experience. Like, I remember my husband kind of chatting to the two midwives that were there. And I was very particular about wanting the curtains closed. I didn't want to see the darkness outside. And I had a salt lamp beside the bed. I wanted that on. I didn't want anything else on. And that was just it. I was happy kind of listening to them babbling a little bit, but I wasn't really engaging with it too much. And then I got Deck to run the bath, even though I knew with my pelvis, really the bath wasn't going to do me any favors because it's not in any way large enough to labor in. But I just wanted to sink my hips into the bath if I could, even for 5 minutes. And so he ran it and he had it lovely and warm. And he came back into the room and he said, okay, I have the bath ready. Do you want to come out to it? And I said, yeah. I might just get in just for 10 minutes or so. And I don't know how long it took, but it took Deck and the midwife to help me go from the bedroom into the bathroom because my hips were just like frozen. My pelvis just would not move. So they waddled me in, and I stepped over into the bath, and I think I just knelt in the bath. So in the end, I didn't even get my pelvis into the bath because I couldn't even fathom how to lie down in it. It was just too narrow and I was just way too large. So I just kneeled, and the midwives brought in the gas and air, and I sucked like Jesus on it for the first contraction in the bath. And then I just turned onto all fours, and the second contraction was the expulsive one. It was the mooing like a cow, making the most ungodly sound I can barely remember, but my husband has demonstrated a few times since. And the midwife quickly said to Deg, pull the plug on the bath water.
Yeah.
So he was there fumbling, trying to get that open. He's told me this after. I was completely unaware of what was going on, but literally it was that contraction. Finny was born in one go. And I'm delighted he wasn't born on the bed and destroyed the bed, and all the mess was contained in the bath, because I'm a real nurse neat freak about mess. So it's like I set up to give birth in the bath, which I didn't. Yeah, but yeah. Maybe subconsciously I did. But I regret, I shouldn't say I regret, because I had no control over it. I did what my body told me to do. I was on all fours, and this contraction came. I could feel him moving down. And I know as a midwife, it's really important that the baby's head is delivered first in one contraction, and that the body doesn't come until the second contraction. And it obviously is to allow the pelvis to open further and allow the baby to turn a little bit so that they don't do you too much damage coming out, to allow the baby's shoulder to turn and rest for a second as well, to allow all your muscles and everything to create space for the rest of the baby's body then to come. But I remember just feeling this intense pressure of his head passing through. And remember, I'm on all fours, and I cocked my leg like a dog. I cocked my right leg as if I was having a wee up against a lamppost.
Yeah, I did the same.
Yeah. And I basically just freed up space, and he shot out in that one contraction, and unfortunately destroyed my perineum in the meantime.
Okay.
Thankfully not so bad. They did think when the midwives, I got into the shower after I had the most gorgeous shower in my own shower. And then I got into the bed to have my perineum looked at, and I didn't think there was anything wrong, but they both had a look at it, and they both were like, I could see them kind of doing this, going, oh, will you have a look at that? Will you have a look at that? And they thought it was a third degree tear. So, yeah, ambulance into the hospital, me and baby. And that was a bit kind of not chaotic, but that was a bit unsettling that hour after the birth. We probably didn't get to enjoy it as much as we should have been able to because of that. Because the midwives were amazing. They knew that because I'd had a home birth and because I was feeding him myself, I was really particular about keeping him with me. And a third degree tear means going to theatre, and you can't bring the baby to theatre. And there's all this worries in me about baby being separated from me and not being able to feed and getting cold. All these kind of things that babies are supposed to stay warm. They're supposed to be skin to skin with one or other parent. So that kind of bothered me, but they made arrangements that if I needed theatre, it would be for the shortest bell possible, and they would try and keep Deck in the theatre waiting area with the baby so that we weren't too far apart and this kind of stuff. None of which was necessary in the end, because when the doctor examined me, she felt it was just a bad second degree.
Okay.
So I got stitched, and we came straight home an hour later, which was fabulous. That was great it was such a relief to just be stitched and be done, and not have had to go to surgery and end up getting an epidural and God knows what else. Which, you know, I've seen that happen in so many times, and I feel so bad for women when they've been through their labor and they've been through their pregnancy and they've given birth to their baby, and then they have to go to theater, and it's just one of those unfortunate things. But luckily for me, it wasn't the case. So we got to go home. That said, my postpartum recovery was much, much longer after Vinny. And in part, it was because I feel myself, my body was a little bit older. I went and got pregnant before I was even postnatal. And I'm the biggest advocate now of people waiting, if they can, at least 12 months before they get pregnant again. It used to be said if you've had a cesarean to wait a year, but my belief is if you've had any form of birth, because you've had a pregnancy and you've held a baby, ideally waiting a year to recover. It's taken me 18 months to nearly recover, but I'm still not there yet. I have a pelvic prolapse that was terribly bad, and I've done a lot of work on it. I've done daily work on it with very specific directed physio, women's physio instructions about how to properly do my pelvic floor exercises, which I had been doing wrong for a really long time. And it's really only in the last kind of 6 to 12 months I'm doing them right, and I'm starting to see it pay off. But it's still a problem. It'll still be a problem for me, I think, probably maybe forevermore. But I get more good days now than I have bad days. And I do entirely attribute Vinny's large head and very, very fast expulsion from my body to that. And probably as well, my abdominal muscles hadn't fully knitted back together after my pregnancy with Miles. So my body just wasn't fully ready to be pregnant yet, I think. So it's just taken me a lot longer to recover from.
It's hard to consciously get yourself ready, because you're still, like I did the same, 21 months between mine, but I was still in that mode of like baby mode. I was still feeding, and was I still feeding Oliver? No, I wasn't, but I was still like sleepless nights. You're still in baby mode when you go do it again, if you want to have a tight gap. So it's really hard to recover and then do it again.
Yeah. You think you're recovered, but you're probably not fully there yet.
Thank you, Aideen. That was amazing. Problem. Thank you. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. If you would like to share your story, you're more than welcome to get in touch on the website, irelandsbirthstories.ie. Click on the Share Your Stories tab and I'll get back to you as soon as possible with a recording date. Thank you to those of you who are listening consistently, but there has been a lot of new listeners over the past couple of weeks. So I really appreciate those of you who are spreading the word, whether it's over coffee with a friend, on social media, with a pal in work or whoever. But there are definitely people talking about the podcast. So I really appreciate it. It makes all the work worthwhile when I see the people tune in every week and now twice a week. So I will be back with you on Thursday with a brand new episode. Enjoy your week. Bye bye.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.